on Buckets of Books, and we both just finished reading 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. And there will be spoilers in this episode, just prefacing.
Oh, good warning. I feel like this worked out so perfectly by chance. We teased it in a past episode, but have we read the same book at the same time once or twice on purpose, right?
Yeah, but we do it accidentally kind of often. I think this is, like, not the first time this has happened, which is a lot of times for an accident.
Yeah, we've had a lot of overlap, whether or not it was at the same time or not. But, we're both finished, we're ready to get into it, and we talked a little bit about the beginning and the setup, but let's talk about the end, because yes. There's a lot to say about that. I feel like that is what really made the whole thing fall into place for me.
Yes, I totally agree. It's like an intense book. It's 400 pages, which I feel like is pretty common now, but just like there is so much in every single page and every single paragraph. Like, I was reading it for class and I was keeping a list, not for class, just like for myself, of like everything that happened in each chapter, and I would like go back to the list to refresh myself, and I would like forget major events that happened just because so much is happening. And so I feel like the end was like a reward almost for making it like to the end, because of how I loved it. I was reading outside because it was like gorgeous this weekend, and I was like holding my breath for the entire like last three pages, and I was just like, I was so excited. I don't know, the ending is like, I feel like as close to a perfect ending as a book can get, just because it literally circles so nicely, like with the themes and with the characters, and also like I feel like for the reader it is a way to say like, you have made it to the end, here's the title and the very last sentence, like here is everything that you have just experienced that the characters are now experiencing alongside you, which is such a beautiful way to end such a crazy book.
Right, and it was like the structure of that, the literal, you know, reaching the end of the story for Aureliano too, but just all the kind of like final full circle moments, you know, he's the last Aureliano, last of his line, like the incest thing comes back, but it works, you know, like there's the pigtail, and you get kind of the first of the line and the last of the line, and you know, really working in tandem with the history and fall of the town. It just all, you know, I feel like I was left, I had kind of whiplash for different parts of this book. You know, where am I being taken? It's hard to follow. There are so many Aurelianos and Jose Arcadios, and, you know, where am I being taken here? But then it just, every single little thread tied back together in a way that just, like, something sliding exactly into place.
Yeah, I feel like threads is a good way to describe it, because they mention threads a lot, but just, like, having, I don't know, it was just so beautiful, like, to read about this very natural destruction of this place that we've really, like, witnessed grow up over the course of the 400 pages, and then seeing everyone that has died and been dead for, like, 100 pages already, having them come back at the end, even if they're not actually there, just, like, hearing about them and hearing their histories again, with, like, Melquiades's parchments that we've had as a figure the entire story, like, that being revealed on top of just, like, the way it's written and having it, like you said, like, all come together, like, so seamlessly was so worth it. Like, it totally, I don't know, usually I really hate when people are like, oh, you just have to make it to this, like, the second episode, you just have to make it to the second chapter, and I did really enjoy the book, like, I would recommend this, but I think, if it can be said, the ending really did, like, make the entire book worth it.
Yeah, I kind of even think I would enjoy it more on the second read.
Me too.
It wasn't unpleasant by any means when you're in the thick of it, but there is that feeling of confusion, and now I would want to go back and savor and revisit how he was able to zoom out to this level and really have a masterful grip on this whole tapestry.
Also, because, like, it took me a while to stop being so worried about my confusion and to, like, embrace the confusion and, like, move on with it. And I think, like, the countless incest plots that just, like, kept happening. Like, I understand the history repeats itself, but, like, it just, like, all of these crazy, crazy events just, like, kept happening. And while I was reading, I would kind of feel like, okay, like, I get where the theme that you're trying to say, but, like, is it really necessary to have this demon? Is it really necessary to have more incest? And I feel like having read the end, it's like, okay, like, there was a purpose to all of that. It wasn't just this, like, meandering story that, like, is just gonna end really abruptly. Like, every single character history that we read or subplot or plot, like, was purposeful leading up to this ending, and it wasn't, maybe we could have done with less incest, but it made everything, like, feel intentional that I had just spent so long, like, being so confused about.
Yeah, I did not hate the incest nearly as much by the end. What a weird sentence. But it did not feel in the end like it was for shock value. It mm-hmm. felt like it was something that had been carefully done. I think the moment where I stopped worrying about my confusion was with all the Aurelianos. I think there were 17, I think. And then I was like, okay, he's just having fun with me now, you know. I'm obviously not going to be able to follow all of the Aurelianos. And so then I started kind of, like, loosening my grip on that and thinking more, like, you're supposed to associate certain traits with the Aurelianos yeah. versus the Arcadios. And, you know, there's that, you know, the twins who get mixed up, and that was kind of fun, but... then I stopped worrying so much about every single individual character and thinking about them more as iterations of the mm-hmm. same thing over and over again in the generations.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the same for me. Once I realized, like, okay, all the Aurelianos are like this, all the Arcadios are like this, like, then it became easier for me to latch onto the new characters they introduced just because I could keep track of... I didn't have to worry about their personality as much as I did, like, the scenarios they were in or, like, where they were in that moment. I also, like, I was surprisingly sad by a lot of it. Like, I was sad when some... Mm-hmm. And, like, obviously a character dying is sad, but I was, like, really sad when Amaranta died and, like, when Ursula died. Mm-hmm. And just, like, all these moments, even, like, seeing Macondo, like, as it becomes this, like, beautiful place and then this very modern place and then this very ugly place, like, that was sad to see... Macondo as a character, as it changed and, like, warped and distorted itself, but, like, still be able to tell who the, maybe not individual characters, but individual archetypes were within each character and each new future that we were in.
Yeah. You and I feel like, often use the phrase, the setting as a character. We think about the active role that a place fits in, but this was extreme and in kind of a different way. It really felt like we're following two narratives here that mm-hmm. were the same. We've got the family and the town, and they're just in complete lockstep.
Yeah, which I love. I love, we say this all the time, but I love when the setting has such a heavy role and such a heavy presence in the text. And I think it's, like, done really beautifully, too, where it's not personified, but it's not personified. Like, it's just there, and it just is changing alongside the people living in it, and we just accept that as the magic and also, like, as the reality of it.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, the individual tragedies that made you sad, and I was kind of struck with this feeling of every character being sort of reduced to the greatest passions and tragedies of their lives, you know, yeah. because even though there are characters who you follow for most of it, you aren't really seeing a lot of daily life. Like, how could you be? We're going, tracing our way through a century. And so it was poignant, but also it felt like we're kind of riding these highs and lows, and some of them, I don't know, hit harder than others to me. Mm-hmm. The one that, like, my favorite little thread and the part one that made me saddest was Mimi and Mauricio.
Yeah, I was just gonna say.
Yeah, I thought that the writing on that one especially mm-hmm. was really beautiful, and you get to have the very quick feeling of, you know, falling in love and then the very brief tragedy, and but you see those characters for some of the shortest amount of time throughout because they disappear. And so I think I had conflicting feelings about that, being really attracted to like that intense, brief storyline, but also, you know, still that feeling of whiplash and mm-hmm. wanting some more sometimes.
I feel like their relationship in particular, like, really did in a much smaller space what the entire book does, where you see them meet and you see them grow up and you see them fall in love and then you see like both of their deaths and you see their downfall and you see them forgotten, and like it all happens pretty quickly, and it just like, I don't know, it was beautiful. And at the end they say that Aureliano and his aunt are the only ones who had like quote-unquote real love, but I feel like their love, Mauricio and Mimi's, was like felt more real to me than some of the others, where it felt more like a mm-hmm. like a youthful kind of love rather than this like very intense adult like lust and desire for someone that you couldn't have, which was interesting that like it wasn't supposed to be that way. But and then also like on different path, but the whole banana massacre chapter was like, I feel like such like a masterpiece of a chapter. Like that was really the only chapter that was only about one story. Everything else had like a million different things going on, but then that segment was just like all about the massacre, and that is all that it was, and that was just like, it was so heavy and so powerful, I thought.
Yeah, that was such a turning point, you know, so much of the downfall is traced back to that, even much more than the war, I would say, mm-hmm. and we followed the war for such a long time in various ways, but that was just a very sharp hairpin for the future of Macondo, it felt like.
I feel like even given all 17 Aurelianos, the most confusing part to me was the war and like trying to understand who was conservative and who was liberal and what the liberals wanted versus what the conservatives wanted. Yeah. And like I liked the Colonel's storyline within that, but I didn't really, I don't know, part of this was intentional, part of it I think it was just confusing. Like the political aspects to me were the most confusing piece of this whole crazy book.
Yeah, but I think that it was supposed to be the same windswept feeling because mm-hmm. you know, they didn't use real political parties and you only got like the very basics of what each side fought for, so it felt more like we're fighting a war for the sake of war, you know. He
yeah,
was just
definitely
kind of destined to be a fighter in this, and I think that people sort of changed allegiances, or like sometimes you weren't always sure who the good guys were, and that was it felt on par with the rest of the book to me.
Yeah, it definitely felt like the same kind of confusion as some of the other segments. It was just, I also think that was the first time that Macondo wasn't this like Eden and this natural paradise anymore. That was to me the first like, oh, this is our real world, we're not in fairyland anymore. And so that, like, I don't know, it was sad because I have the copy of the book that I have is like the very classic one with the green cover, and I feel like the beginning of the book looks like that cover where it is lush and like all of these flowers, and then once we start getting into the war stuff, it's like, this is a very different Macondo, this is our world now, this is not this magical dream realm. Which is just, like, sad right. to see that happen.
I know, the writing was so good in the descriptions in the beginning, so it was sort of sad to lose that. And also, I'm just, like, generally less interested in war stuff
yeah.
than family stuff or, you know, the fairyland side of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, like, really, that, the Colonel Aureliano felt like, you know, our core touchstone
yeah.
Aureliano, and that was such an important part of who he was and like the trajectory of the town. I think it was necessary, but I didn't enjoy it as much as other parts.
Yeah. In class one day, because I read this for my magical realism class, we like had three different questions to choose from, and me and this other person at my table both wanted to like talk about Ursula, and only one other person at my table wanted to talk about the war, and we like shut him down and did not do that. But I think it's so cool how like Ursula are just, like, not even a character as important, quote-unquote important as her, but, like, any one of the characters have just as much of this, like, intense arc and purpose going on as the war might, where there is just as much to say about Ursula as there is about the war, the massacre, or, like, the magic within the book, which I think is so cool when, I don't know, like, at one, with Ursula in particular, like, at one point she stopped becoming a character and she felt more just, like, this very omnipresent, like, symbol in the background, almost like the town, which was cool.
Yeah, she's the character who you're really with the whole time, more than anybody else, you know, not completely, but she's the one who you don't see her birth, you find out some things about her upbringing, but she is basically one of the founders here, and so it feels like she, more than anybody, does represent the town and goes along with its highs and lows. And so it was really sad to me when the rain started and when she kind of started losing it, and when they played with her like a toy. That was really sad.
That was really sad.
She came back and was so horrified.
That, like, paragraph where her grandchildren or great-great-great-great-grandchilden, like, when they were, like, pretending, like, she was dead while she was still alive, like, that was so sad, and, like, I know, like, it's sort of funny, and it's like, oh, look at them playing with her, but, like, that was, like, that felt so mean, and just, like, I don't know, these mean children. But also her whole de-evolution felt very real, and, like, my grandparents, and just, like, seeing that change, and, like, it is magical, and it is, I don't know, it's the realism of the magical realism, which I liked.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I guess I kind of take that back a little bit, though, because in another way, the character who it feels like you're with the most is Melquiades. But, you know, he's not alive for nearly as much time, but it feels like his hand is guiding everything, you know, that he is also kind of one of the founders in a way, and kind of has the spirit of the town with him the whole time, but also it feels like with the end that he's our storyteller, that he's the one guiding, you know, speaking, he's the one looking at us as the reader, it feels like.
I loved that, like, piece at the very last paragraph when Aureliano was, like, realizing that the parchments had been out of order, and, like, that to me was, like, the most beautiful part of that whole ending, because the book is so out of order, and nothing happens, like, no, time is never cyclical in any storyline that we're reading about, and, like, having that acknowledgement that, like, maybe Melquiades is the narrator, maybe it's a different narrator, and it's just his, like, story that we're being given, just acknowledging that time is out of order, and that is why time is out of order, is, like, that was so cool. I, like, got so excited when I read that.
Yeah, I like that, too, in the way that it works with the storytelling. Like, I remember, you know, we first hear about the 17 Aurelianos, and we know that they're all executed, basically. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly they're back. Suddenly we're finding out about these Aurelianos, you know, for the first time, like, in the story, you know. And right. It feels like, wait, but I already kind of heard a mention of this. And so you know already that they're all going to die as they start coming out of the woodwork. And so it gives you this kind of premonition feeling, which feels totally appropriate since, you know, the Aureliano can predict the future, and
right.
And then last Aureliano can kind of has this affinity for the past. So it just all, it just really works well together for structure and timing of the whole thing.
Definitely. Yeah, the ending is just, like, incredible. It's so, so good. And that everyone, I don't know, it circled back so beautifully. And it's just so good. Like, I'm so excited. I was so excited to read that ending. And endings are always excited, but this one is, like, I don't know. It's different. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like whenever I'm getting to the end of a long book, I start reading really fast, and maybe even rushing it, which, you know, isn't the best. I feel like sometimes I speed too fast over an ending. But it really kind of worked in this case, because I felt like, I got, what happens to my
I know, like, the wind is, like, it's coming.
I know, and the page is fluttering, and it just feels like I'm him. Like, I gotta know, and all of a sudden, you know, and it's over.
And, like, we are him because we have experienced this book in the same way that he's reading the parchments, and then it's, like, okay, and now it's, like, over for us as well.
God, such a such a feeling of finality that feels very in real time as you're reading it. Like,
yeah, yeah.
A book within a book.
But also, like, I feel like the writing, and part of this is because there's less exposition the more you go, but I feel like the writing itself, or just the pace at which the story was told, began to pick up at the end, where part of it was because we knew these characters more, and they just had, there was more that was happening to them. But I feel like by the end of the book, like, we were going through generations, like, and deaths and births, like, quickly, whereas in the beginning, it took a while to get the first generation set up, and, like, having the book itself and the writing and therefore, like, the reading of the book speed up as you know the book is ending and their family line is, like, coming to a close was super cool, too.
Yeah, I was interested in that last vignette, that the last couple, the last of the line and their story. It was also really beautifully written, and I like that we suddenly slow down because we're running out of people, we're running out of the generation. And the thing I really appreciated about that last group of characters is the feeling of some people have tried to escape this fate. Some people have tried to, like, marry outside of the family. And, you know, she said that she wasn't going to name her sons Aureliano and Arcadio, but it just, it all ends up catching up to them. And, you know, characters like Mimi and Mauricio kind of try to, like, do something outside and are immediately erased from the family narrative.
Yeah.
And so at the very end, there is no escape. You know, she left her husband, she's left with her nephew, and it just completely brings us back to the fate that they were never able to escape.
I know, there's this, like, that one line where she's like, oh, what if we didn't name him Aureliano? Like, there's this sense that, like, they are so close to a different future. Like, if they just went with this different name, like, their fates would be different. And at the same time, you know, like, there's no way they're not going to name him Aureliano. Like, they have to name him Aureliano because he is an Aureliano. And, like, at the same time as they have these two choices, like, there is only one choice that they will make. And there's only one fate and one future that they, like, can actually have in that scenario.
Right, you know, if she, you think if she had just stayed in Europe, but of course she's going to come back to Macondo, her fate is tied with that one. And when other people have tried to leave, like, you know, when Mimi went to the convent, they just immediately zoom, flash forward to her death, because it's like she's not
she's
part
dead
of this
to them.
Anymore. Like, we're erasing her from the family tree now, and it's just about, like, her heir, who is still part of this, so... it does leave you, like, you know, you could break the cycle, you could have your own future, but it was just never going to happen that way.
I think, I don't know, there were certain moments where the women were, like, so close to these different futures, or I wished that the women had more of a character other than just, like, their body and their beauty and their motherhood. And I know part of it is they were following the path of their mother, where Amaranta was just like Ursula because this history is repeating itself. Then Amaranta, Ursula was like the two of them. But I don't know, there were still parts where I wished that the women had as much as the men did. But I think the fact that, like, they were still able to live their lives, and everyone was still able to live their lives and make these choices and still end up at the fate that makes so much sense for their story was really powerful.
Yeah, but, you know, when we talked about this book last time, we were kind of saying, oh, the female characters feel really flat, and I still think that that's true, but also I think that the male characters
that's
are not that three-dimensional.
I agree, and, like, I think it's because there's just so much that happens to them that, like, we do kind of only see these big events, and then their childhood, and their past, or their death, or whatever, but it's just, like, everyone... I don't know, like, the characters are all, it's all, they're all the same character, and so what happens to one character happens to their son or something like that, where they can be flat because they don't, we don't need to know their thoughts because we're seeing, like, all of that play out.
And we're so used to seeing female characters being reduced to their ability to have children or who they fall in love with, but... this whole novel is just one big family tree that does sort of reduce the men to that one thing too. And I mean, you could make a case about the Aurelianos and the Arcadios being even flatter than the female characters because they only have a handful of these traits that they all share.
Yeah,
whereas it's a little bit harder to... do you think that the women are a little bit more distinct?
Yeah, there's less of them and they live longer. So yeah. They have that ability to be more distinct.
Yeah, I mean, there are some repeats. We have two Remedios. And we have
three
child
years.
Everything, but it's, you know, it would be impossible to be completely fleshed out and in the mind of all of these characters, and it just, the book wouldn't work that way.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I totally agree. We're looking at the family, we're not looking at just Amaranta or just Arcadio.
Right, but I was glad that we got to see some of them through mm-hmm. multiple generations, like Amaranta, and she was an interesting character.
She was annoying. She was, like, I don't know, she was not my favorite, but just as a character, not as a figure.
She wasn't very fun, but I liked, you know, she was sort of, like, defined by her relationships, but they were all relationships that were not to be, and her, like, fear that they mistook for bitterness at first, and like her when she's doing her shroud, you know, she's pretty tragic, and but we got to see more of her than a lot of other characters in the book.
Yeah, I forgot about that, how she was like there the whole time. I loved with her shroud and just everyone's deaths, I loved how the deaths happened. Like, I loved that before we saw them die, there would be a little line in the narration that was, like, 4 weeks after her funeral, this happened. Or, like, right before he was about to die, he thought this, and then we would go somewhere else, and then we would go and see their death. Like, part of that is time being a circle and out non-linear, but I also think it was just, like, their deaths are as much a part of their lives as they are, like, the end of their lives, which is so cool to see.
It does feel that way. Repeating myself, but it does just feel like the markings of a family tree where mm-hmm. you're born, you fall in love, you know, yeah. have children,
yeah.
and you die. Those are just the biggest marks of each character's life here.
Mm-hmm. I feel like snapshot is the wrong word because there's 400 pages of snapshots, but it really is a snapshot of the tree and what happens to the tree. And like you said, like the little lines, the very intertwined lines that are connecting them.
Right. Yeah. And maybe a character I really liked was Pilar. You see her through most of it, and I like how she was very involved. She, you know, was the mother of many of these children, but she did always feel like an outsider, like somebody else who could see the future for this mm-hmm. family. And who, you know, she said she didn't even need cards to predict a Buendia's future. And I really loved her death and how that ended up being, like, the beginning of the end for Macondo. Like, when she's no longer there to observe and predict a future, there is no more future.
Yeah, she was this interesting outsider who was very interconnected and also really only there occasionally interacting with them. But her saying, like, I don't need the cards to understand a Buendia is, like, so beautiful, because I feel like we, the reader, don't need cards to predict what will happen to them. Like, we have seen it happen again and again and again, and there are all these moments where the outside, we can fit into the outsiders who aren't Buendias or people who are sort of on the outskirts of their town and of their lives, and then at the end when we become, like, once we realize we've had the same experience as Aureliano, it just fits together so nicely.
Yeah, it's just all just feels very intentional, and I can't imagine the, like, chart making or note taking or the tables that it would take to put all of this together. I feel like it's one of those books where you would not be able to just write and see where it takes you. It all feels very measured.
So crazy, crazy measured and complicated. But so worth it. The ending, hopefully if you're listening to this episode, you have already read it, so you won't be spoiled. But the ending makes it totally worth it and makes me totally, totally recommend the read.
Yeah, me too. I've talked about Love in the Time of Cholera before, mm-hmm. and I feel like maybe Love in the Time of Cholera is still, like, a little bit more me than this book, but it's the same kind of thing where you're on this, like, epic journey with these characters, but in that case, it's a couple rather than a family, and the end just feels like, yes, that's completely right, that this is what the perfect end to this journey, and I just really felt that way with this book, too.
Me, too. I loved it. Yeah. We recommend it. We loved it. The ending was wonderful. And we'll
see. Obviously, I had a lot to talk about.
And we'll see what the next book we accidentally read together will be.